It's a story of hubris, triumph, and defeat, and a story of the wildcat culture in the energy industry. Aubrey McClendon, CEO of Chesapeake Energy, stepped down this week from the company he founded 30 years ago. McClendon led Chesapeake through a long string of bold acquisitions to become the second largest producer of natural gas in the United States after ExxonMobil. But Chesapeake Energy lost more than $1 billion in the first three quarters of last year alone, and McClendon is under investigation for allegedly violating federal antitrust regulations when he tangled his personal investments with the companies. Russell Gold, energy reporter for The Wall Street Journal, joins me now from the studios of our affiliate station KUT in Austin, Texas. Russell, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, John.
So, first of all, give me a sense of McClendon himself, McClendon the man, his style, his excesses,
sure.
And some of his tangles with the board.
Well, Aubrey McClendon is a fascinating individual. Unlike a lot of oil executives who come from an engineering background, they typically are petroleum engineers. You know, he got a liberal arts education from Duke, and when you sit down and talk to him, he's got an incredible gift of persuasion. He's patient. You talk to a lot of oil executives and they sort of look at you like, why can't you understand the argument I'm making? You know, it's patently clear. Aubrey McClendon, you know, will sit down and talk to you and try to steer you towards his point of view and his vision. But when he founded the company was really founded all the way back in 1983. It went public in the early 90s. And really, from about 10 years ago on, he became committed to leasing up as much shale as possible, as much rock that he could then later drill, and has been the number one driller in the United States and the world for several years. And all along that period of time, you know, he ran the company always wanting more. He wanted to be the largest driller. And personally, he also had a lot of that sort of desire to have a lot. You know, he became a wine collector, and at one point he had to offer his wine cellar as collateral, and the list of his bottles ran 78 pages. I mean, this was a person who didn't do anything in half measures.
So in the energy industry, we've seen this story again and again. As long as the price of the commodity stays high, almost every excess is forgiven because
right.
It believes that the assumption is the next decision will be just as brilliant as the last one.
Right.
But
high
when that changes,
always forgive sins.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened here in the gas industry?
Well, you know, in some ways, he really was the victim of his own success. He went out, he drilled and found so much gas that gas prices, natural gas prices started to go down. It was only 5-6 years ago. They were over $10 per 1,000 cubic feet. They've been under $4 and, in fact, under $3 a little last year for several years. And all the Wall Street analysts say it's going to continue that way. So, you know, he was sort of – he had this world-class collection of assets, natural gas fields and leases, but the prices were so low, you know, he really wasn't making money on them. And that really turned in mid-2008, and ever since then, Chesapeake's really been hurting and been struggling to make money. You know, the other thing that really happened was that McClendon is really a genius at getting money from Wall Street. He was always very, very good at it. And eventually Wall Street sort of fell out of love with him, and it became more difficult to get money. The cost of borrowing became a little higher, a little steeper, and a lot of the leverage that Chesapeake, the debt that Chesapeake was carrying really caught up to him.
And the debt really became bigger than its asset base, not in numerical terms, but in terms of Wall Street. And when a commodity price, you know, is cut in half, Wall Street mm-hmm. typically does take notice. All of this, it seems to me, could have been foreseen. If you're going to get a huge new supply of natural gas, the price is going to come down. What was he blindsided by here?
Well, I think he and many others were really blindsided by how much gas could be found, how productive these shale rock formations could be. And I think that was certainly part of it. He did not anticipate natural gas prices going down as far as they did. But, you know, the other flaw really in the business plan and in Aubrey McClendon's term as CEO is that he just did not turn. He could not slow down. He could not slow down his acquisitions and how fast he was pushing Chesapeake. And that ultimately really hurt him. I mean, if in 2008 he had started to say, you know what, it's a new world, it's a lower gas price world, we really need to calm down and slow down, he might have survived. But that really wasn't in his makeup.
And this smacks of the same thing that happened at Enron, where they let it go off the cliff before they really took steps to deal with an unsustainable kind of spiral.
Well, I think there are certainly some similarities here, but it is worth remembering that Enron was largely built on a lot of accounting fictions, mark-to-market manipulation. You know, at Chesapeake, really, there's a world-class collection of assets. You really couldn't say that about Enron. He has a lot of stuff to sell, and in fact, he's been selling it as quickly as possible, several billion dollars worth just this year, Permian Basin assets in West Texas, et cetera. But, you know, I think in some ways the legacy of Aubrey McClendon is really going to be very kind of conflicted. You know, this is the end of an era. You know, he started the great land rush of the last few years where Chesapeake and other companies went out and leased everything they could. You know, it was sort of an era where landmen were knocking on doors across Pennsylvania and Ohio and Texas and Oklahoma and North Dakota and handing out giant royalty checks, and the rigs were coming. But he pushed the pace of this development so quickly that frankly, everyone was a little bit overrun. The government regulators and communities weren't ready for this massive development of oil and gas in the United States. And so what we're left with is, you know, he pushed the United States. He helped turn the United States on a course towards greater energy self-sufficiency. We're producing more oil domestically and importing less of it. We have a huge energy price advantage versus Asia and the rest of the world. But at the same time, a lot of the questions that shale drilling and fracking, which is what's required to make these shales give up their oil and gas, you know, a lot of the questions, you know, what happens to the water? Where does the water come from? Are there going to be emissions? You know, what is there environmental damage? You know, a lot of these questions were sort of pushed to the side, and now the industry and the government is coming back and trying to answer them and trying to get better use of water and fewer emissions. But you know, it's you really sort of have to look at Chesapeake and its culture and the speed at which they progressed to begin to understand why these questions weren't asked earlier, and they're only being asked now after thousands and thousands of wells have been drilled.
And of course, it's because the business is going to be more prosaic. It's going to be more focused on these environmental issues and maintaining the supply that Aubrey McClendon managed to get out of the ground. A happy story for America in terms of energy independence becomes the downfall of Aubrey McClendon. Russell, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Russell Gold, energy reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who actually reports that Chesapeake is going to have to unload another $11 billion of assets probably in the next year, even with McClendon gone. Russell, thanks so much.